the Second American Revolution. That is what young far-left radicals thought they were fighting in the late 1960s and early 70s when they started a movement to overthrow the U.S. government. They used bombings, kidnappings, assassinations, and bank robbery to spread their message. It's a period of time Brian Burrow calls the forgotten age of revolutionary violence. He writes about that time in his book Days of Rage. He follows the rise and fall of radical groups like the Weather Underground. And Burrow told KUOW's David Hyde that Seattle was an active secondary theater in the so-called Second American Revolution movement.
Early on, the Weather Underground was very active here in 69 and 70. In fact, the first ever book written by a Weather Underground alumna. Susan Stern came out in 1974. She had been in Seattle. Unfortunately, they kind of blew up the Seattle apparatus here after 1970.
Not literally.
Yeah. No, figuratively, as they kind of downsized after several reversals, and ultimately Seattle became a place that a lot of Weather Underground people came to hide. People who had indicted that the FBI was after came to Seattle. Came to Vancouver, especially those who needed to get out of the country.
What issues were they protesting in Seattle in particular?
Well, Seattle, of course, was those in Seattle who were protesting were protesting the same things that everybody in the rest of the country was, primarily the war, but also civil rights. What made Seattle a little bit different is the rich history it has of labor organizing protests and violence. And so that history and kind of Seattle was such a hotbed of that type of organizing made it initially a magnet for Weather, and a number of its top organizers came from Seattle.
And you also write specifically about a man who was a Boeing machinist and a labor organizer. What's his story?
Clayton Van Lidegraaff was actually one of the oldest members, in fact, clearly the oldest member of the Weather Underground at a time where most of these young people were in their mid to early 20s. Clayton Van Lidegraaff was in his mid-50s. He had been active as a labor organizer and a radical in Seattle long before most of these kids had been born. When they came to Seattle to organize, he jumped on the bandwagon and was an avid and eager member of the San Francisco-based Weathermen. From 1970 through 1976, he was active in many of their major operations, including the escape from prison of the great LSD guru Timothy Leary, but perhaps his greatest contribution, Van Lidegraaff's greatest contribution to the Weather Underground, was its dissolution. It was at the end when Van Lidegraaff led an internal coup against Bill Ayers and the rest of the Weatherman leadership in 1976 that the Weather Underground began to come apart.
Why did he do that?
Because he believed, with quite frankly an awful lot of evidence behind him, that the Weather leadership had abandoned their ideals. They had gone underground in 1970 to launch a political revolution to empower the black underclass that they hoped would rise up with them, and none of that had happened. When other black militants had asked them, join our cause, the Weather Underground had decided not to, because it was by then eschewing murderous violence. Not to put too fine a point on it, the Black Panthers and the Black Liberation Army wanted to kill cops, and they killed quite a few. And by 1971, the Weather Underground decided they didn't want to do that anymore. And Clayton Van Lidegraaff was one of a minority in Weather that said, we've lost our way. We're not doing anything. We're sitting around, you know, smoking pot and talking about a revolution nobody's ever going to join. And Van Lidegraaff was one of the true believers from Seattle at the end, who was like, no, we're going to take this over and try to turn the clock back to 1968, to 1969, to 1970. And needless to say, he was as defeated in the end as they were. Van Lidegraaff and kind of his new reconstituted Weather Underground were all swiftly arrested.
How unusual was it for a 55-year-old man to get involved with this youth movement?
Well, it was unprecedented. If you look at all the groups that blew up things and shot people and robbed bank in the 1970s, there's really no precedent for a grandfather-aged guy to come in and kind of mentor these young people and to actually get involved in their political operations, if you will. Van Lidegraaff was a singular figure. He's largely forgotten because most of America doesn't pay a lot of attention to left-wing history. But in terms of the Weather Underground, he was a significant figure.
Brian Burrow's book is Days of Rage, America's Radical Underground, the FBI, and the Forgotten Age of revolutionary violence. What was the legacy of this age of revolutionary violence in Seattle, in American politics?
I've tried hard to identify a legacy. I've talked to a lot of people about it. If you look at politics, it's very difficult to find any legacy that these people have left behind on the American system. It just didn't happen. But if you want to look back on a societal, a practical legacy, look at bomb-sniffing dogs. Look at the security that we have now at corporate headquarters, at courtrooms, at city halls. That all began when the first bombs began going off in this country in 1970 and 1971. But that's really it in terms of a legacy. About all you can say is that for young radicals today, say those in the Occupy movement, there has certainly been a rediscovery of 70s and 60s era radicals, not because anyone wants to go back and embrace political violence as they did. Nobody wants to go back these days and blow up buildings or kill cops. But I think when they look back, when people today, young people especially, look back today at the radicals from the 1970s that did all this, they do find their commitment, their focus admirable, their zeal, and there are lessons to be learned there. And that was one of the reasons I wrote Days of Rage, not at all from a political vantage point. I have no politics. I just write straight history. I just wanted to reclaim this period because I felt like most of mainstream America had forgotten it. But it also turns out that there are people on the left and the right who want to rediscover it and take a very different set of lessons from it.
Well, and today we see the rise certainly of anti-government sentiment both on the left and on the right. How different is it from what you're writing about here from the early 1970s?
Well, it's night and day. I have gotten tons of questions since this book came out about how these groups compare to Black Lives Matter, to all the radical, if you want to say, all the organization that's happened over the last 18 months since Ferguson. And, I almost chuckle when I talk to when I watch the media talk about Baltimore going up in flames or this demonstration getting violent. This is nothing. Everything that's happened since Ferguson amounts to one good night in Watts in 1966. That's a good night in Newark in 1968. I think that young activists, young protesters today know their history. They know that there was a generation in the 60s and 70s that embraced political violence. And they know what that achieved, which is nothing.
Talking with KUOW's David Hyde, that's Brian Burrow, a Vanity Fair correspondent and author of this book, Days of Rage, America's Radical Underground, the FBI, and the Forgotten Age of Revolutionary Violence. And they were talking about Seattle's active part in all that here on KUOW's The Record.